On this 26th day of January 2011 in San Diego, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, General History, Chapter 17, Description of the Varnashram System, text number 32. Agnau, Gurau, Atmani, Cha, Savabhuteshu, Mam, Param, Apatakdi, Upasita, Brahma Varchasvi, Akalmashaha, Agnau Gurav Atmanicha, Sarvabhuteshu Mam Param, Apatagdir Upasita, Brahma Varchasva Kalmashaha, Agnau Gurav Atmanicha, Sarvabhuteshu Mam Param, Apatagdir Upasita, Brahma Varchasva Kalmashaha. Thus enlightened in Vedic knowledge, by service to the spiritual master, freed from all sins and duality, one should worship me as the Supersoul, as I appear within fire, the spiritual master, one's own self, and all living entities. Purport. One becomes glorious and enlightened by faithfully serving a bona fide spiritual master who is expert in the Vedic way of life. Thus purified, one never engages in sinful activities, which immediately extinguish the fire of spiritual enlightenment. Nor does one become foolish and small-minded, trying to exploit material nature for personal sense gratification. A purified human being is apratagdi, or without consciousness of duality, because he has been trained to observe the Supreme Personality of Godhead within all things. Such sublime consciousness should be systematically taught throughout the world so that human society will become peaceful and sublime. Om jnana timarandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshu unmitam mena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master Srila Prabhupada opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So, this is the result of this training that we've been hearing about, where the brahmachari at the school of the guru, known as the Gurukula, learns not just the verses of the Vedas, but also a whole culture. A character is being instilled. This beginning of this section, we've learned how in the morning and evening, one should collect foodstuffs and other articles and deliver them to the spiritual master. Then being self-controlled, one should accept oneself for oneself that which is allotted by the acharya. In other words, one takes a very humble position, no matter what the background, where you've come from, whether you're the son of a king or the son of a middle-class vaishya, whatever, you all take that role of being the menial servant, not just servant, but the menial servant. And in that mood, if one adopts that mood, then the guru is inspired to pour forth the knowledge. See, the knowledge flows when one takes this mood of shushusho. This is shushusho is an important word. It comes up in the Bhagavatam in the first chapter of the Bhagavatam several times, and it means hearing with great attention and serving. In that mood of attentiveness. Shushu sho shadadhana sabasadeva kataru chi syan mahatsevayadi prapunitirthana. How does one attain this all important attraction for hearing the message of Vasudeva? This is explained in the second chapter, first canon. By humbly serving the spiritual master with faith. Shadadhana sa vasudeva kataru chi san. This rati for Vasudeva kata comes into being. Sevayam vipra punya tirtha na shevanat, who is a personified tirtha, In other words, the spiritual master who's carrying Krishna, who's his whole life is dedicated simply to serving and Krishna and teaching in Krishna consciousness. So that one gets the affinity to hear. So that affinity to hear, then the Vedic studies, dedicating oneself to Vedic studies. That's the previous verse. And that's the mind becomes peaceful and the heart is open, and on the guru's side, he's very eager to teach. See, this is an important aspect. Now, the result of that, thus enlightened in Vedic knowledge, by service to the spiritual master. So they go hand in hand. Then one becomes freed of all sins. You know, the fact that we're here in the material world means that we had a certain amount of sinful activity in a previous life. So they have to be cleansed away. Now, the process of devotional service does that. And the more sincerely and intensely that we engage in the process, the quicker is the cleansing. It's anarta nivritti, these results of sinful activities. So then one becomes enlightened. In other words, one begins to attain this spiritual vision. And part of that spiritual vision is explained here. One sees the Supersoul in everything and is worshipping the Supersoul. Now, how can we practically worship the Supersoul in our daily activity? The best way is to try to awaken the awareness of the Supersoul in whoever we meet. Right? The whole idea of preaching or teaching is that Krishna is already in the heart. He's the original teacher. He's enlightening from within the heart. But in the conditioned state, one cannot hear that. One is not open to hear that. And so the Supersoul appears externally as the spiritual master and as the Shastra. We can relate to, just as he appears externally as the deity. So we can see him and serve him, because we can't serve the original form of Krishna in the spiritual form. Of course, we know the deity is spiritual, it's non-different. But Krishna is so merciful, he makes himself accessible to our gross senses, so to speak, so that they can become purified through service. And then we see there's no difference between the deity on the altar and Krishna in Goloka. So in a similar way, he makes himself accessible and the knowledge accessible through the media of the spiritual master and the Shastra. And a very nice verse Uddhava expresses in this 11th canto his appreciation for Krishna as the guru. He has the opportunity to have Krishna's direct instruction, just as Arjuna did. And he says, Naivopi yanti pachatim kavayastavesha brahma yushabri kutam riddhna mudak svaranta yontarbhis tanubhutam ashaban budunvan achaya chetiva pachasvakatim vyanakti. It says even the great sages and devotees who appreciate the value of Krishna's mercy, they cannot express their gratitude to you over lifetimes of Brahma. They're so thankful to you. Why? Because you appear within and without. Yon antar bahis tanubhutam. It's a very nice word. Is tanubhutam. Tanubhutam means those who are bearing the burden of a body. In other words, the embodied souls. The conditioned souls. Ashubang vadunvan. You appear in order to cleanse away all the ashubha, the anartas, the uncleanliness, the kalmasha, the sinful reactions. How do you do that? Acharya chaitya vapashas. In two forms. As the acharya, which we've been reading about. And also the chaitya guru within. So you from within and without. And what's the function? Swagatim vyanakti. To show the path back to you. Back to yourself. Very nice verse. So that's what's going on here, is that in the traditional Vedic culture, everyone, three higher classes especially, they understand the invaluable nature of this education, this training, so that not only will my son, and my family be blessed by this, but the whole society will stay on course. So that whatever ashram or varna you're in, you realize that the final goal is to please Hari, right? Atak pumbidvida shrestha varna ashrama vivagasa su anustatasya dharma sanksidhi haritoshinam. That the whole organization of society is meant to focus on pleasing Hari. And then when the whole society runs nicely and one is pleased in oneself. Without that, it becomes a framework and it's corrupted. The varnas and ashram become corrupt. So here we see, the freed from all sins, one should worship me as the super soul as I appear within fire. Now, what's the significance of this fire? Now, fire is there in every, you know, traditional Vedic sacrifice. And it's the idea is that the offerings are eaten by Agni, but when the sacrifice is meant for purification and going back to Godhead, in other words, within the realm of bhakti, then Krishna himself, you know, eats those, the offering. He's consuming. What is he consuming? Our impurities. You know, when we say swaha, we're meant to be burning up our karma and our sinful reactions through the nature of the fire. We don't emphasize fire sacrifice so much. We have it occasionally. But, you know, the real fire is the tapasya, right? Is the fire that one that's within for purification, and there are certain austerities that we have in our process of bhakti yoga. They're not severe, but they're necessary. You know, the four regulative principles are the most famous, and they're essential. They're essential because those. If you think about it, those four things put oneself firmly within the bodily concept of life. You know, and gambling. You know, I guess the gambling, you could say, is just disturbs the mind so much. You know, I can give a little personal account of that. I used to be a little bit of a gambler when I was a kid. You know, 19, 20, 21. Luckily I had hardly any money, so. I would go to the horse races, where I lived. They had these ponies that would ride. You know. And the Roosevelt Raceway. So I took my little paycheck. You know, I was making $1.35 an hour. even in those days, that wasn't much. So I think, you know, if I lost $10, it was a big thing. Of course, that money, by inflation, it's a little more now. But anyway, I remember seeing, this is illustrative. You know, even then, because I was fairly intelligent. I had studied some philosophy and everything, and here I was going to this racetrack. I was looking around at the character of the people there, and it's kind of the real kind of scuzzy people, you know, people who, there weren't many high rollers there, you know. They were upstairs, so this is like the hoi polloi down at the bottom level. And they put down their $2 on this, you know. I remember seeing one fellow. This was an extraordinary experience. I'll never forget this. He was just standing there, in the middle of the crowd. You know, there's always be a crowd just before the gate goes off, so everyone's rushing. And he was standing there, and he was like, we see these homeless people, you know? He wasn't bathed, his hair was all growing out, and everyone was making a big wide berth for him, you know? And there was a certain smell, you know? And after I had given this business up, you know, and years later, I began to, this is like the personification of this gambling mood, you know? It's really in the mode of ignorance. It's very degrading. And it's exactly like a drug. It's definitely addictive. Although, luckily, I wasn't, you know, wealthy enough to get into debt, and I kind of realized it soon enough. But it can take you over. And I was reading today the 14th chapter of the Gita, you know, how the mode of passion produces greed, you know? So this is an element of that. It's an element. You try. It's just like a drug. Where you're all right. I won't think about, you know, anything. Maybe I'll make it this time. You know, I'll make it. You know, and you're in the action. Your life has meaning for that for the few moments when the horses are running around. You can forget everything else. It's just like taking alcohol. So the four eggs. I'm not going to get into each one of them. The others are quite obvious. How it increases one's awareness of the body and especially the meat eating. Cuts off one's interest in transcendental life so much, you know, it's mentioned in the Bhagavatam. So that's the original tapasya. Now, when you've been in devotional service for a while, you think, well, you know, that's not, okay, you know, that's it wasn't that hard giving up gambling, you know, and intoxication, meat eating, maybe sex is a little harder, but you see it's possible, you know. But you try to, you know, mention that to someone outside, you know. Prabhupada gives a story, who is it? I forget his name now. He was some Lord Jetland or something. Yeah, Jetland. And this was a story that probably Bon Maharaj came back with from England. He had gone before, you know, Prabhupada to try to preach in the West. He spent some time in England and maybe Germany. So he there was, you know, the English, the British knew something about the culture. You know, they from all that those decades and centuries of the British Raj, you know, they were interested, you know. And they knew that Brahminical culture, you know, you're at the top. So can you make me a Brahmin? So this Lord Jetland has, can you make me a Brahmin, Swami? You know, he had obviously been listening to a lecture or something. And Bhadma said, yes, surely. You know, following in the mood of Bhaktisiddhanta, Saraswati Thakur, no one is barred. It's not a question of birth. You just have to do these things. And all he mentioned were the four regs. He didn't mention anything. And he came back with, oh, impossible. That's impossible. You know? So, but what seems impossible becomes possible if one surrenders to the process and takes up the process of chanting and so forth. So, by that tapasya that we have in bhakti yoga, one attains these things, becomes freed from the sins and duality, and by one attains a way, a practical way of worshipping the super soul within the heart of everyone. And the simple practical way of doing that is trying to remind everyone, including ourselves, each other, of Krishna, you know, and awakening the awareness of the supreme super soul, you know, in the heart of everyone. And indeed, I thought of this many years ago, and I it's confirmed in the Shastra, that when we relate to each other on a Krishna conscious basis, speaking about Krishna, about Krishna's service, you know, kirtan is the best way, Sankirtan, you know, chanting together. Then we're relating through the super soul. We see the unity. The point here is that see the super soul in everything, one's own self and in all living entities, right? So that's how there can be true unity within society. Prabhupada often made this point, you know, that if you want brotherhood, if you want peace, you know, and he came to America in the middle of a war. Most of you don't remember, a few of old timers remember the Vietnam War. It was a major oppressive reality for how many years? You know, 12 years in the early 60s up to the mid 70s. You know, thousands of Americans were being killed, a million Vietnamese eventually died, and all these injuries. People coming back, they would only stay for a year, so you had after a while a whole population of veterans who had been, you know, traumatized by that war. And so, you know, Prabhupada came right in the middle of that. In fact, they did a kirtan. One of the earlier sankirtans was up at the UN. You read the history, you know, because that was very much in the minds of everybody. And Prabhupada, you know, he spoke very forthrightly. No, you know, there'll never be any peace. The UN, all they're doing is increasing the flags, you know, because it's just basic Krishna consciousness. If you're in the modes of nature, then your vision is going to be colored by the body you're in, the nationality, you know, the economic. It's all seeing externally. That's the seeing all its differences. It's right there in the Bhagavad Gita. When you see in the mode of goodness, you begin to see the oneness. And transcendental vision is, oh, vidyavaniya sampanne brahmane gavihasini. Whether one is a clean Brahmin or a dog eater, Chinese, Russian, American, Indian, German. You see the oneness there. And Prabhupada would often point out in later years as the movement developed that this movement is a proof of that. It's an international movement. Even in any you know, here among, like, what are the 10 of us here, or 8 or 9? You know, we have so many different ages and races and places of origin, you know. But we're peacefully doing the same thing. We're relating to each other in a very peaceful way. So that's a very valuable thing, because one, you know, as Prahlad Maharaj mentions, the demonic vision is always, who's my friend, who's my enemy? You know, how can I exploit this person? You know, and if they become inimical, how can I kill? You know, this is the vision of the demons, which is imbued so much with passion and ignorance. The vision is, of the devotees is, oh, we have so much in common. We're both spirit souls. Krishna is our master, you know. I may remember it a little more. This person doesn't. Let me give them Krishna, you know. And this exploitative mood is completely gone. This is why, you know, people sense that. The success of the book distributors or any teachers of Krishna consciousness is that people really feel that you want to give them something. You're not trying to, you know, rip them off or anything. You know, that the book that you're holding in your hand is much valuable but the five or ten dollars you give, which you just, you know, spend on a million different things. You know, that idea has to come out. And it's the very mood of the Vaishnava that you're encountering. There's something there that inspires the super soul within to say, yes, take this book, or take this, you know, prasadam, or come to the temple, whatever it may be. So we're constantly dealing with this fact, you know, of the super soul within the heart of everyone, ourselves and everyone else. And that's the connection, eternal connection that we have not only with all human beings, but every living being. That's why you see, you know, I always smile when I see we're chanting japa and there's some bug and inevitably comes, you know, more in the summertime, but even now we're seeing, and you see the devotees, you know, try to get him out of the way. I think Ryan was trying to get the bug out of the way so he wouldn't be crushed, you know, take him outside, you know. I mean, who has that mentality, you know? Yes. Stomp on him, you know, who cares, you know. But if you say, oh, this bug, you know, has a soul, a super soul, he has his own program, you know, he has his life to lead, go to the next level, you know. Why cause suffering for any being? So that sense of empathy is coming from this knowledge. And I think I forgot the verse, but Prahlad Maharaj says in one of his teachings, Eta avani vilokesun pungsa swarta paraksvana. Ekanta bhakti govinde yattat sarvata tad ikshanam. Yeah, pretty close. So he's saying that, you know, these Etavad verses, if someone is interested in studying the Bhagavatam, look for these verses. You know, you have a Veda base or something. They begin with Etavan or Etavaj or some variant of that word. They're almost always like a summary verse, a verse that really encapsulates a lot of the teachings that came before. So here, I think it's the last verse of his teachings to his friends. In that chapter, he has his whole teaching where he's teaching his friends. And he says, Etavad evalokes punksang swarta parasmataha, that every living being can achieve his own actual goal. This word swarta means the goal of the soul, not these other goals, as he's told his father. Nate badu swarta katimi vishnu. That people who are too imbued with material desires, senses are uncontrolled, they don't understand that their real goal of life is Vishnu. They have all other goals. So here he says the real goal for everybody, the supreme goal, Swarta Parasmitaha, it is heard, he's referring to Shastra, Ekanta Bhakti Govinde. Pretty obvious what that means. One-pointed devotional service to Govinda. And I love it that he uses the name Govinda there. You know, he's actually using the word Govinda. He's worshipping Krishna. What's the result? Well, one result is yattak sarvatra ikshiram, that by this bhakti, one sees the Lord everywhere, within the hearts of everyone. Sarvatra, he sees him everywhere. Because he's very conscious of his transcendental mentality, and he teaches it, as opposed to his father's. His father was all mode of passion, mode of ignorance, the dividing, not seeing the unity of everything. And Prahlad was seeing, you know, even had no enemies. He didn't even have any enmity toward his father, who was trying to torture him and kill him. You see, this is an extreme example of the result of that. So that's the vision of the preacher, is that everybody's a bhakta. They just don't know it yet, right? And now that I've tasted some of this nectar, and I appreciate the value of the knowledge, the invaluable knowledge that's been given, even a little bit, let me go and see if I can find some receptive soul who will begin taking it. You know? And that was Prabhupada showed that, you know, to the nth degree. You know? And lo and behold, that's the most dear service to Krishna. You know, to recruit more of the wayward souls who've forgotten him. You know, and he says that in the Bhagavad Gita. There'll never be one more dear to me. So we have this invaluable opportunity. You know, I remember when the Bhakti Vriksha program started way, way back, you know. I remember reading one of the articles, maybe it was written by Jai Patak Maharaj, I don't remember. But it was, or maybe it was a transcript. And the whole idea was that the thing that you try to give, you know, in these bhakti, you're trying to give people a chance to glorify Krishna. Because the glorification is where the real nectar is, you know. So it's not just that you're glorifying and they're listening. But you're engaging them and also glorifying. And then when we get a taste for that, and so much realization comes, people become more interested in reading. Going back to the whole idea of getting the taste for hearing and chanting. You know, getting a taste for reading Prabhupada's books. There's a nice story, the Sankirtan story I have to tell. You meet receptive souls in the most amazing places sometimes here. This is in Australia. They send in a lot of stories, and I help Vijay because he sends out this newsletter or an email tree of like Sankirtan stories. So he sends them to me, and I touch them up a little bit. So this was such a nice story. So this is taking place in the recent marathon, and I think it was two devotees who were in a van and were going out. So they decided to get out of Melbourne. He said, let's get out of the hustle and bustle of Melbourne, and we'll go out into the country and see what we can find in the little towns there. They knew some malls, you know, there's not that small, but that they could go to. So he described they went to the first place and they did okay, and then they had to figure out where to go to the second place. So they went to the second place and slept overnight, but the next morning was pouring down rain. They couldn't leave the van practically. It was pouring because they had these recent floods, you know. So this was the warm-up to the floods. So what to do? Should we go back to the other place, or should we go forward to another town that we know where there's a nice mall, you know? So they end up saying, okay, we'll take a chance. Hope it stops raining. It lets up a little bit, and we'll be able to go to this mall. So they get out, and they end up going to the mall. The only thing was that this one devotee remembered that he had been kicked out of there a lot of times. But they said, well, maybe it won't happen this time. So they were in dhotis. They were in dhotis, you know, saffron, brahmacharya. So he describes, he's walking into the mall with his book bag thing, you know, and he's got the saffron, and there's the stocky security guard with dark glasses, you know. And he's got to pass through him to get to the mall. He says, okay. So he says, in my mind, a little voice was telling me, this is the end of our Sankirtan today, you know. So he goes up and the guy says, you know, gruffly, he says in a country accent, you know, they have all these accents, like we have this southern accent, you know. Says, so what's going on? You know. He says, well, we're traveling monks and we're presenting these books, you know. So he says, let me see. He says gruffly, let me see what it is. So he shows him Bhagavad Gita. So the vision you have, he has the Bhagavad Gita, hardback, he gave him one, and he has another one in his hand, and he starts to show him the pictures. Right? So this is the scene. So he starts showing him the pictures. And the guy, he says, he started swearing. So he doesn't say what he said. He says swearing and saying, these are incredible. These are awesome. They're so they're just right, you know. And so he takes off his sunglasses. He starts reading the captions, you know, to the pictures. They explain the standard pictures, the karma picture, the chariot picture, you know, the writing. So he gets to the karma spread. You know, there's a big spread of karma. You know, you act like this, you get like this. You know, you get the body of a tree or a hog or something. So he's reading the caption, and then the devotee in his mind, he's recounting it. Oh, no. Now this is not good, because he's going to see himself there. He's going to get upset. So he reads the caption, and then he says to the devotee, oh, I have some very bad karma. And the devotee says, don't worry. By spiritual activities, you can get free of your karma. He says, no, I'll never be able to get rid. So then he says, yes, you will. And so they go back. He has an argument with him. Yes, you will be able to get rid. And so he says, they keep going back and forth. And finally, the man says, so, what do you want for it? For the hardback Gita? He says, well, it costs us, you know, $5 to print. We asked as much as you can give a donation. He says, well, I don't have that much spare on me now. So the boy says, well, that's okay. He says, take this perfection of yoga and these cookies as a gift. And he was very happy with that. He said, okay, I'll read it later. So then he says, the big question was, I have to ask, can we distribute books in the mall? So this security guy said, sure, you know, I'll watch out for you. You know, he gave him the good spots to go. He told him, watch out for that corner. There's some thugs hanging out over there. So the whole time, they're distributing, and this guy is watching and make sure they're okay. Plus, they see him on the closed circuit TV. You know, his boss was him, but this guy convinced the boss to let him continue distributing. And then the final thing was the fellow's wife was hanging around with their friends in the mall. You know, apparently he was going to get off duty soon. So he knew who she was, so he didn't approach her. And at the end, she complained, why are you approaching everybody and showing the books to everyone except me? And then he was shocked. So he said, so that day we distributed a lot of books in the mall, and we had the security guard cover, you know, from that. So it just goes to show you, you know, Krishna's in the heart of everyone, and in the right mood and the right, sincerity, then the super soul is inspiring this guy, not only to do service, you know, to his eternal benefit, and he could very well become a devotee. So that's, you know, that's the practical experience of worshiping the super soul in everyone's heart here, is that this effort to try to give Krishna to somebody is really trying to pray to the super soul to inspire this person to become receptive so that they can begin the process of devotional service. Thank you for your attention. Any questions or comments on these few points? So, Dr. Alec.
How can we know when we're acting under the guidance of the super soul and not just mental?
Okay, I just remembered. I've been asked by someone who I send these talks to that they want me to repeat the questions. So the question was, how can we know that we're acting under the guidance of super soul and not just under our guidance of our own mind? Yeah. Well, especially at the early stage, we need to understand the instructions of the Shastra, the scripture, and we need to hear carefully the instructions of the guru and the representatives. So the whole idea is that we come to Krishna consciousness and Srila Prabhupada tried to drum into us and he tried to establish there is a flow of genuine authority, coming down from Krishna. And that if you follow that authority, then your life will be sublime. You'll progress and achieve the highest goal of life. Now, that assuming that we have some faith in that now, that there is such a thing as Krishna and the Guru, and so then how do we find out that authority? Well, by Prabhupada's great effort and mercy through the scripture. That's the first thing. But also the representatives. Srila Prabhupada's movement grew because he was able to establish some, authorities. In other words, the sincere devotees then started centers and they in turn trained other people. So if we're acting under our... You with me, Alec? Anyway. we're doing the bona fide thing, in our devotional service. We know the programs, no mystery. And we're reading the Shastra and we're trying to follow as much as possible and remember, Krishna during the time. Then we can know that we're acting under the super soul. And eventually, through, more and more purification, we can feel and hear the instructions of the super soul directly. Very advanced platform. But Prabhupada made that point. At every moment, he's being guided. And that's why when we follow Prabhupada's instructions, we're acting according to the super soul, because the super soul is one. The super soul has these different functions, one is to sanction and oversee the workings of our karmic activities, but that's not what he wants, But his actual desires are coming through here, and then he gives so much enlightenment. Krishna has the super soul in the heart that's giving the intelligence by which he can come to him. When we practice devotional service in the way spoken of in the previous verse, machitta, margata prana, bodhiyantak parasparam, kadiyantastamam nityam. So, dedicating, thinking of him, that's the verse. Machitta. And gata prana means using our life force, our energy, our senses, for his service. And thinking about him, discussing him amongst devotees. And in this way, enjoying life. Tushyanticha damanticha. It's not a dry process. Though to those who act in that way, Krishna gives the intelligence by which he can come to me. You see? So how is he giving it? Through the heart. So that's the super soul acting. So it's not just, you hear a little voice. It's that, you're chanting your rounds or you're thinking of Krishna and the inspiration comes to do a certain service in a better way, or to perform a certain service. You see what I'm saying? The very intelligence to do what we ordinarily do is coming from Krishna. And we can see devotees who are sincere, how they refine their service over time. They become so expert. Raj loves to talk about Janani Masprabhu in Mayapur. It's Shiksha Guru. I'd like to have a Shiksha Guru like that too. And he's done the same thing, for about 30, 40 years now. It's almost 40 years. Probably is 40 years. You can imagine, what the purity is. Through thick and thin, the difficulties in Mayapur was very difficult in the early days. Attacks from the Muslims. Yes, it's continuing on, Sure, he's had, diseases and things, But faithful service, so enlightenment is coming, so much is coming, So that often also comes to us. If we're a little sincere, Krishna give us the intelligence to improve our service. That's the super soul, blessing us. And, of course, he's taking away the material desires. That's another blessing. Big blessing.
So we don't necessarily directly perceive, like, the super soul, but...
Not right away.
But indirectly.
Yeah, it'll come. I'll give you a reference later. I forget the exact reference in the second canon, where Prabhupada talks about how one can perceive the super soul by a little use of the intelligence. And you can actually perceive how the super soul is working in your life. Any other comment or question?
Rajendra Nanapabu? Thank you for a wonderful class. When you were talking about what is Krishna as the fire doing in the offering of the yajna, mm-hmm. you remember that section?
Yeah.
You said he's eating our sins, as we say, swaha. And it seemed as if you were implying that was like the primary activity that's taking place. And my question would be, wouldn't it be that we're trying to offer devotion and as a secondary or side effect the sinful reactions are being?
Yes, certainly. And you see, you know, in the fourth chapter of Gita, there are so many different fires, right? The fire of the controlled mind, the fire of hearing and chanting. And Krishna explains that the central goal of that is this purification. So, you know, our motive, you know, it changes in devotional service. Krishna says, somehow or other, come to me. You know, you may be in trouble, you may be want money, you may be curious, or you want knowledge, that's the best. But if you're pious, you come to me, and then he takes over, and he purifies the motive. So, you know, when we perform our fire sacrifices, as they are, doing initiation, or usually during the advent of the Gita, we have a fire sacrifice. So we're not, I'm not, you know, you're thinking, well, oh, let me get rid of these sins and I'll be liberated. You know, we're not thinking like that. It's more or less part of the whole event that we're simply trying to please Krishna. And, you know, in the case of the initiation, which I think is the most important case where we have the fire sacrifice, is a witness. You know, it's a witness for the vows. Prabhupada said, before the fire, before the deity, before the devotees, you take a vow. So the whole idea is it gives you more and more impetus to stick to the vow, right? In other words, it's a formal thing. So, but that's one of the things that's happening during this whole event, is that one is burning up his impurities. The most important fire is the fire jagya, is the sankirtan jagya. There's no question about it. You know, that's where the sins are really eliminated. But you soon realize, you know, that's not the goal. That's a byproduct. The sins, the kalmasha, as mentioned here, that's a byproduct of our devotion. We should want more and more to get a taste. You know, the taste is the first of hearing and chanting is the first inkling of love of Godhead. Because ruchi becomes attraction, real attraction for Krishna, which matures into bhava and prema. So when you're talking about getting a taste for chanting, I was just thinking today, you know, so the mind is so fickle, like a bee, you know, you're trying to chant your rounds and you're trying to remember, you're trying to concentrate on the holy name. But everyone sitting here must at one point, you know, have the taste that, yes, you know, wow, that's, yeah, I just heard the word Krishna. I haven't heard it like that before, you know. So this verse came to mind of a prayer. You can pray for that. You can pray for the taste. There's a lot of prayers. So there's one prayer in the Padyavali. You may remember this one. It's about the miser. You know, vichayani, vichayani, vichinyani, punak punaha. Kripanasya dhananiva tunnamani bhavandunaha. So he says, put in a poem, the miser carefully collects and counts his precious hoard and always contemplates his wealth with avaricious aims. I pray to become a miser who's compelled, O Lord, to constantly collect and count and contemplate your names. So the idea is that, you know, this sense of greed, you know, you can get a little inkling of it, what it's like. Just imagine, you know, this thing, or just project, because we'll hopefully get to that state, is that here's this holy name, right, this name of Krishna and Radha, you know, Rama and Hare, you know. So now we hear so much, you know, about this holy name. It's good to read about the holy name. This nama glorification is important. And madhura madhura metta, and it's the sweetest of the sweet. You know, and then in sixth chapter, you know, when Krishna talks about when you realize once attaining it, you'll think there's no greater gain, right? So that's all in the holy name. So, you know, and you hear about like Sanatana Goswami, you know, how he was chanting, and he expresses at the beginning of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita in this one verse, Jayati Jayati Namananda Rupam Morari Vidamita Nija Dharma Dhyana Pujati Yatnam. Sakatapipadigitam shuddhaya heliyava. No. Katamapi sakadatam muktitam muktitam pranayam padamam amritamekam jivanam bhushanam. He's saying that all glories are glories to the holy name. Namananda rupam, which is the very form of ananda, of bliss. Ananda personified. Of the name of Murari, Krishna. And if one really gets into chanting, he's going to give up all of his materialistic and puja to the gods, you know, and personal meditation, dhyani puja, and yatna, which means a very great effort at all these things. And he says, if you chant it even once, if someone chants even once, without somehow or other, some prani, some living entity, you get mukti right away. And then he says, padama mamitamekam is my soul and supreme nectar, and my only ornament, and my very life. This is how he's appreciating the holy name. And that's just one of many appreciations. And Rupa Goswami also. So then we're chanting the same name. I mean, we're chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. But we're not experiencing that way. So I'm thinking, you know, just if you just cultivate this somehow or other, you know, do the right thing, get up early and chant and progress, you know, then at one point you'll have this name, which is such a source of, you know, of ever-fresh nectar, always with you. You know, what more do you need? You know, imagine just being able to call to mind, you know, or have at your at any moment of your life the most wonderful source of pleasure that you can have. And you know, what more do you need? You know, you can see that. So that, you know, that sense of greed, you know, the greedy person, greed is kind of a distortion of karma, because you can only, like the miser, he doesn't even spend it, you know. This Avanti Brahman, before he became, you know, the great the renunciant, he wasn't even spending on himself. He was just enjoying having the money, you know. And you read about these billionaires, they can't even spend all their money. Just having the money, you know, the money itself becomes a source of sense gratification. So that's a craziness. But you know, you can't enjoy it. You know, you become like a Scrooge, you know. So, but here, this holy name, you know, it becomes more enjoyable and you give it out, right? It's something that's not spendable. It's just the more you give it, the more you get it. The more you taste it, the more, you know, you can't consume it and say, okay, that's enough. You know what I'm saying? Unfortunately, we do. We say, okay, that's enough. I'm going to think of something else. We put ourselves to sleep with the holy name. I said, oh, God, I'm so glad I finished my rounds. Now I can do something substantial. You know, now I can do my service, you know. But that chanting is meant to go on constantly. So anyway,
now I finished my rounds, so I can do any damn
thing I want. That's not really. But anyway, I don't know what I'm trying to say here, but there's a point we should aspire for, where, you know, you get a little taste of it in these long kirtans. I mean, hours long kirtans, where the mind kind of gives up and finally surrenders, and okay, I'll think about the holy name. So that's the high level of purity, but it's a promise, you know. That's promised to us, and we can get a little inkling of it, and then you know, it'll be Krishna consciousness will become very much more easy and pleasurable. Yeah.
So then, would the way to experience the taste of for the name be to chant like 32 rounds a day?
you'll feel disappointed when you come to the end of your round. You want to keep going, you know. And you will keep going, even if you don't have the beads in your hand. Okay, we better stop. I'm sorry.